In this episode, we interview Ryan Hillenbrand. Ryan has four shops and, in his words, got into auto repair by accident. But that accident turned into a positive change in his life, helping him change the way he thinks, the way he learns, and the way he views the value of business. For him, family and relationship is everything. And as he tells us, if he finds your feelings, he's not giving them back.
Dang, you don't
build,
good.
You don't build trust with a customer.
Are these just amazing?
they're really good. You know how you hold on to those like foundational things you hear somebody say?
He just blew your mind.
You guys have to keep going because I need to follow you. I'm addicted to it. Like, I love it. And my guys are in the same boat. They're like, you got to keep going. You got to go to ShopFit. You know, you got to go learn. You got to go speak. You got to do whatever you're doing because we want all that stuff that you're bringing back here. I think he was listening to the radio. He said, me and your grandpa got in a lot of fights, but we never went to bed without saying, I love you. Good Lord. As a teenage kid, stuck with me.
It's good, man.
What you realize is like, we can fight like hell, but at the end of the day, you're on the same team. Man, if you need some self-development, that'd probably be the first place I'd recommend that anybody starts. Because it identifies where you're at right now and where you can be, and it basically builds the roadmap. I know that person's behaviors. I know how that person would have acted in this moment. I know what they would have said. I know how they would have tried to sell it. Because I was that guy, I can snuff that guy out a lot of times now. And I think that that's it. We're all going through stuff at any point in our life, whether it be marriage issues with kids, business, church issues, just friend issues, right? And you try to explain it to folks. Nobody really has a better understanding of it than you do. Here's the thing that probably was the biggest thing for me. I was actively going outside of my bubble.
I often say pain necessitates change. Are you going to wait until it's painful enough for you to change? Do you know that your shop has another gear, but you just can't find it? ShopFix Academy has the largest community of like-minded business professionals to help you find that next gear. You get coaching, community, and personal development. So here's my challenge to you. Call ShopFix. Try them out. Don't take my word for it. Find out for yourself. I know firsthand what they can do. I've seen the businesses turn around. I've talked to the owners whose lives have changed, whose families are doing better today than they were before. Call 615-645-3683. Take this challenge as an opportunity to find out for yourself. Imagine where you could be after 12, 24, 36 months from now. You can be in a completely better place, or you can wait, let another year go by. Pain necessitates change. Call 615-645-3683 and let them know we sent you. Call ShopFix. I'm amazed how many shops out there are not taking advantage of digital marketing. Using a digital marketing partner is your key to effortlessly increasing car count. And notice I said partner, not vendor. Finding an experienced partner who works with you makes all the difference. A partner gets to know you and what your business needs, not just apply a template and send you a bill and call it a day. Leads Near Me is a partner you need. And yes, they have experience managing over $16 million in ad revenue, specifically in auto repair. But what's even more impressive is how they work with you. If you go to their website, leadsnearme.com, they host a ton of videos and podcast content for you to get to know them personally. Or call them at 888-953-2379 and find out how they can partner with you. Again, that's 888-953-2379. 79 leaves near me, effortlessly increasing car count.
You're listening to the Success Leaves Clues podcast, a podcast for the auto repair industry, where we uncover the journey of real shop owners. We hear their story of what it took to get their breakthrough, because we are here to inspire you to have your own breakthrough, to be the success you've been looking for, and to change your industry, your family, and your life forever. Thank you for joining us, and now on to the episode.
Ryan, thanks for joining the podcast.
That's good to be here, man.
Man, I'm excited about having you here. First time for us to be recording in the flesh in Aaron's office, so it's great to have you.
Yeah, I like it. It's a nice setup, man.
Awesome. How did you get into auto repair?
Yeah, well, the easy answer would be my dad started the business back in 1972. I grew up in the business, so naturally I didn't want anything to do with it. And I went to school for engineering at the University of Kentucky and found my way back to it. Just coming back to work for my dad. I started dating my now wife at that period of time. And so at that point, it was probably a comfort decision with no idea we'd ever be here.
Yeah.
But it was just a family business, and it was a decision that was tough, I think. But there's a lot behind that story, but eased my way back into it. So yeah. It's familiar.
Now, you've got 4 shops, right?
We do. Yep.
And one of them 16 bays?
One of them 16 lifts, 12 bays. So we have some double stacks in there. Yeah.
Was that the one that your father started, and that's one you started out with?
It was. When I came back, we only had we had a body shop. We had heavy duty towing, light duty towing. We worked on class 8 trucks. We did everything. We worked on farm machinery and like implements and stuff. I mean, it was crazy. I came back, I was welding farm equipment for a lot of the farmers that were still doing hay and foraging and stuff. And so we did everything, man.
So not specialized.
Not specialized whatsoever. We had about 15 buckets we were trying to fill.
So you started out non-specialized in there, doing right. just anything you could get in the door.
Yeah.
And then when you came in, what did you do? How'd you work your way up?
Well, I came back with an engineering degree background and as a research assistant at the University of Kentucky. I came back from college, so I was already the smartest person I knew at that point.
Of course. Yeah.
So I had to learn through some humility and becoming a little more humble that I didn't know everything. So I came back and I swept floors. I ran tow trucks, eventually worked on cars, started doing some service advising, and just learned everything. I mean, I sprayed, I painted, I would do metal fabrication on hay mowers and balers and different farm equipment and stuff. I mean, I just learned how to do everything.
Now, when I met you, were you the owner, or were you like this, kind of doing a little bit of everything?
Doing a little bit of everything.
But you weren't the owner yet?
Not the owner yet, no.
I met him in a bar, wasn't it? It was Harry Carey's.
Harry Carey's, Yorktown, York, was up in Chicago.
Yeah. In Chicago, and he'd come down to the bar on the ground floor where the conference was, and you had some manager working for you that was a real tall guy,
mm-hmm.
and you're tall, and these two tall guys come walking in, and I remember shaking his hand, and he kept looking off in the distance with his backpack on, and he was just like, yeah, I'm going to do big things. He's like looking around, and he had his ball cap on, and I was like, what's this guy's deal? I don't think I'd ever see him again.
Yeah.
And then you signed up, and...
Yeah, if I remember that conversation directly, it was the night after like the first day of meetings and whatnot. We had gone to your talk, and at that time, there's a lot of other people that are fairly popular in our industry that a lot of people would know that were speaking there. So it's kind of my first time being a real conference, I guess I should say. And so, talked to Aaron. And if anybody knows Aaron's not particularly shy. He likes to pour into you, and he did, man. He just sat there and poured into me. We talked about the body shop and splitting that up and the towing and all that kind of stuff. And we turned right around and went back home and started on it. And at that point, I think Hackers was maybe a month later, roughly.
Probably, because that's back when we had Hackers twice a year. Yeah.
And so he's like, hey, October. We're in Nashville. Come down to Hackers. So I had no money.
I didn't think I'd see him again.
Yeah, I had to work all day Friday. There's no way I could leave. And so that was when we had Hackers on a Saturday, Sunday, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I got up early in the morning, much like I did this morning, 2 a.m., drove down here and walked right in. I walk in and they've got too many people. They're bringing chairs in. Like, we're just trying to get chairs from everybody at the hotel. Aaron walks right up to me, shakes my hand. And I'm like, at the same time, I'm like, there's no way this guy remembers me. And he does. He shakes my hand. He's like, come on in, man. Good to see you. And that great. And that started the whole thing, man.
Wow. So you got advice to start refining your shop. Not taking in buckets and mm-hmm. separating towing, separating everything out. What'd you think when you got that advice? You go back and go, I can't.
Yes. Well, I tell you, I've, if there's one thing that I know is what I was doing at the time was not working. Mm-hmm. And I knew something had to change. And so I think timing has a lot to do with the outcome of a rain dance. But I mean, it was really great timing, because I think it was a time in my life where I was willing and ready to receive. And that backed up with Hackers and then Shop Fix in general was a huge, huge part of changing my life. And I'll be honest with you, the biggest change wasn't even in my business. It was me personally. Mm-hmm. And It's easy to buy into, even in hindsight, like the idea of fix the owner, fix a shop. But like me personally, I had to change so much to be able to get anywhere in life. And so started us down a path, man. And it's been heavy, but it's been fun. It's been good.
What did it take for you to change your mental pattern to become that? Like you were talking about the change. What did it take for you to get over that? And what's something big you can share with us that you learned?
Well, I could tell you, Adam Prizer and I've said it before, but Adam Prizer and Aaron are the first two men that I think I've ever let in my life that I didn't immediately try to compete with. I had a perception when I was younger that growing up, the son of a mechanic, farmer, went to Catholic school my whole life. I had this, we'll call it a perception. I look back and I say perception in hindsight, because as a kid, you see the world through a different lens. As an adult, I lived a really good life as a kid. My parents were there. They provided for us. Like, you don't know any better sometimes when you're a kid. And so my perception was I had to prove everybody wrong. And my ego made me compete with everyone, everybody. I was worried about the shop owner down the street. I was worried about putting on to be what people thought that I was. And so that was a dramatic change for me. And it probably started with Adam. I mean, Aaron was like the polarizing figure and Adam was my coach. And so it really took that relationship that I built with Adam, and then over the years building a relationship with Aaron, that these guys had every opportunity to prove me wrong in what I thought of them, which is they I always put them on a pedestal, and they've always shown up for me like in my life every single time. And they really set the example. My dad's a great example. My brother's a good example, but you know, that's your brother and your dad. Mm-hmm. And, these are probably the first two guys outside of my family life that set the example for me of what being a man is like, what being a good leader is like. Like that was huge. And I allowed myself to not compete with these guys to prove that I was better or something. I just let them pour into me. I let them be the D11 dozer digging the path for me to drive my truck behind. And that was huge. I mean, that was the biggest thing that I can remember in the change, was like, these guys they're good husbands, they're good fathers, they're good leaders, they have good businesses, they're smart people, they're willing to admit fault, they're willing to pivot. Like most of our industry sometimes just has such hard-nosed guys with big egos, like they have something to prove, and it just gets in the way so much. And it keeps their families from growing.
Well, why do they have something to prove? What's driving that ego?
My personal opinion?
Yeah, yeah.
Is, I say it all the time, but our industry has the largest amount of fragile male egos in it from any industry. You can probably even include like MMA and boxing. Because a lot of us, we were the losers. Like we weren't the guys who were, you know, dating the prom queen or scoring all the baskets or doing that kind of stuff. And we were in our corner. We were smart guys. We were working on stuff. We found a little bit of a niche with cars. And then cars became of our identity. And then all of a sudden, the people that didn't need us needed us to fix their car. And so a lot of people are going to attach their identity to what people need from them. Mm-hmm. And I just think that being the best mechanic, we all find our little bit of a path, but being the best thing, they're very protective of that. And when other people come in, I feel like they feel threatened. I've seen it in my own shops. I've seen it as an employee. You might be the biggest, baddest employee and somebody comes in with some talent and all of a sudden you're threatened and you've got to do things to make sure that you keep yourself on the top of that pyramid. And for me, I recognize that in my own life. I mean, I had to be something that I was not, and I had to root for the other guy to be worse because I myself couldn't get better. Like I couldn't make myself better. I was stuck. And so the only way that I was going to be able to compete is to try to either make that guy look worse or hope that he failed, because I couldn't get to his level. And
actually a really interesting thing. You got to your limit. So at that point, you've now turned it outward to other people around you to hope they fail worse than you are.
Well, even with my children, like we have season tickets to Cincinnati Reds. We go to a lot of sporting events. We play sports. And I tell my kids, like, we don't boo ever. And the reason why I say that is because if you've got to root for the other team to lose, you're not that good. And
that's good, man.
Play that better.
Play better. You gotta do the work. You gotta make yourself better. If you don't know how to, you gotta find it. You gotta work harder. Like that's the thing. And it's too much of that in the world. I love when the shop owners around town worry about what I'm doing, because I know they're not worried about what they're doing. And I'm worried about what I'm doing because I got plenty of problems before I need to come and find out what you're doing. You know what I mean? Always. It doesn't matter how good we are. We got plenty of problems in our own businesses. We got to fix.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that topic of ego, it really is amazing when you think about it, and it puts you in a different mindset to move forward and accept things differently. I hear it so many times in all different places. Putting that aside and allowing you to get in that mindset to receive is really important.
And in my own personal experience with the ego, what the ego did is it kept me from being curious. It just allowed me to just write things off from the get-go, right? Don't want to try new things. This guy tried it. It didn't work for him.
It attacks your confidence.
It does. And you might try it and fail, and you don't want to fail.
Yeah.
Like, you can't fail. You personally can't take any more failure when you get to a certain point. So you just don't want to try new things. And being open-minded is really like the path to growth, that curiosity. And so the biggest change in me was I just got curious about, what's this guy doing? Well, that didn't work for me, but it worked for him. How did it work for him? And I think that those were the big things that were like, it wasn't just going, well, that might work for you, but that didn't work for me. It was like, well, let's find out. Is there more to this than meets the eye? And that really turned into it. That was a lot of the big steps forward, putting the one foot in front of the other.
Wow.
So
you start off right off the bat, ego. Just a big,
I love it. You flippantly said, you know, the fix the owner, fix the shop, but I think it's easy for you to say that because in a lot of ways you've gotten past that step. But a lot of people, they're not there.
Mm-hmm.
They're still trying to fix the owner. And then when they feel like, I've done all I can do, not going to get any better, they get this attitude of, well, it's not my fault. It's somebody else's fault. I've done all the self-improvement. I've done all the talks. I've done all the stuff that they talk about here at Shop Fix or any of this other stuff. And I think a lot of clients don't slow down and think through this. And I shouldn't even say clients, people that aren't even clients don't slow down and think through this process and ask themselves, all right, how do I get to this next level? What am I still doing to hold me back? And one thing I've always loved about your pursuit of success is, just to brag on you for a second, Ryan's the type of guy that will own it, no matter how great or how bad it's going. It's like, yeah, we screwed up. We did this. We got to get better. We got to improve. And no matter where I've seen him get to, I still see him going, well, we got to improve. We got to get better. Every single time, we got to improve. We got to get better. And not talking down about anybody else. Mm-hmm. And so I think that a lot of owners, and you just gracefully hit it again just now, talking about how I got to wish they would do bad, right? Because I can't do better. You've gotten through that. You went through that black hole. You're to the other side. You recognize it, but a lot of owners don't have the ability to see that about themselves. Like, they just don't either want to or can't. You grabbed it very quickly. I still remember back in the early years of Shop Fix when you joined and how fast you adopted ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good quality teaching, we say, comes in conflict to our current worldview and changes us. You just let it change. You didn't fight. What made you not put up the fight? What made you accept this stuff as truth and then so rapidly go up this staircase towards this new way of thinking? Because that's the biggest thing for me, how fast you've shifted and how fast you've tried to get others to follow along with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the ego does play a part in that. Maybe the healthy side of the ego, which is, if this guy can do it, I can do it, right? So I think I had that mentality. Number two was, I was the type of guy that if I was going to do something, I'd commit to it first, and then I'd convince myself it was a good idea.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of us have seen ourselves in that position, whether it was be like a new location. You get to the point where you're getting ready to sign paperwork, and you go, oh, crap, like, I don't know if this is a really good idea. So you spend all night doing the research, trying to make sure that, hey, the car, you know, the road traffic counts good. This is a good location. The demographics look good. Like, you prove everything on the back end. And so as a guy that's willing to commit and do that on the back end, I think I love reading. I love getting the information. And so just like an idea that, talking about these guys that are stuck and just talking about the competition, going back to that for a minute, we always act like the guy down the street's going to take all of our car count. You know,
yeah,
he's going to crush us. And you realize that manufacturers are selling their product at a clip that they can only service 30% of the cars that they sell. And these are the largest money backed manufacturers, and they can't even service a third of what
Correct.
They sell, right?
Correct.
And the amount of cars on the road just keeps growing, doesn't get any smaller. And so you realize, like, okay, well, there's enough for all of us to go around. You just keep having little moments like that that convince you, like, this is going to work. This is good, right? And I think that I just trusted the people that were around me too. And I think that that's a huge part of it. I think that trust is a big part of the buy-in, because a lot of people may join company or they may join a group, a 20 group or something like that. And they don't believe in themselves, and then they don't trust what everybody else is telling them. And so what made us grow so fast? I mean, I just was willing to do the things that everybody had told me wouldn't work. And honestly, probably a lot of it came from the fact that I don't know that I trusted the people that told me it wasn't going to work. Right. I mean,
they were all broke.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, it ain't going to work, but you're still broke. Like, give me the proof of concept here, Moneybags. Like, and that's the thing is, it's like, well, if it didn't work for you, maybe I can make it work. I've always thought that I could maybe do so. Maybe I've always had that little bit of thing, like the chip on my shoulder that maybe like I could make it work. There's just so much that goes into it from a mindset issue. But honestly, I was tired. I saw what my dad did for his whole life. I mean, and you just see a man that's worked his whole life and the businesses. And I was like, it can be better than this. It can be better than this. Success for me, when I joined ShopFix, was making $130,000 a year, going to work every day, working 40, 50 hours a week, maybe putting some money in a retirement account. That was what success was in my hometown. That was just a job that paid the bills and gave you something to retire on. And boy, we're at a very different point here, boys. Like, the success for me anywhere close to that anymore. It doesn't have a whole lot to do with money.
Yeah.
I've gotten to a point in my life where I don't ever want to retire. I love what I do. To be honest with you, I hate cars. I love people.
Yeah.
I love business. I love solving problems. I love engineering. Like, I like cars from an engineering standpoint, motors and stuff like that. But it's just, I love people. I love business. Like, it's funny that you get pigeonholed into thinking that just because you work on cars or you're a doctor or you're an HVAC technician, like that this is what your life is. And it's like, man, if you really just open your eyes, there's so much more around you.
Right.
And I think that my definition of success from just a handful of years ago till now is just so much different, and it has so many different variables in it. It's crazy. So what made me, I don't know, part tiredness, part having a decent understanding of what the possibility was. And I can say that probably somebody showed me it's more possibility. Somebody puts possibility in front of you, you don't believe that guy.
Yeah.
The next guy lines up before him and he shows you the same possibility and you're like, okay. And then all of a sudden you get in a group with 3, 4, 5, 6 people that are all doing well. That's a pretty good proof of concept. And when when people are showing you that the possibility is well beyond what you can see, that'll light fire under your butt real quick.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
That was it.
Well, and those bigger players want to hang out with you, even if you're not hitting those numbers, if they can see that you're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger players don't want to hang out with small players that think small.
Right.
But they'll hang out with a small player that thinks big.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key piece that I think for you, you always were like, dude, give it to me. I'm in. I'm all in. Where can I get more? And I've always watched that about you. So tell us about how you ended up buying the shop, because when you first came, you were as your family's business, but you were technically an employee.
Yep.
Trying to save the family business.
Yep.
Walk us through how that whole process went.
Well, the balance sheet was pretty gloomy. There was quite a bit of debt on the balance sheet, to the tune of close to about $750,000 between the mortgage on the building, and none of the stuff was set up proper. Like, the business owned everything. The business owned the building. Like, from a liability standpoint, it wasn't in good shape, and so business wasn't making any money. I mean, that's the old school way of running a business, right? Especially a family business, is you don't pay taxes. What can I do to not pay
tax avoidance?
Yeah.
Don't make money. Okay, that's what I'll do.
Yeah, I mean, I just I remember back in the day. I mean, we still paid everything by check. Every single part that came in the door, we paid by check. We still ran the check register, and the register back in the day when you have $50,000 in savings, but the register so it showed zero. Like, so zero wasn't really zero, but I just remember all the old school ways of doing stuff. So when I took over, we were doing $16,000-$17,000 a week. And that was, we'd have better weeks, 25, 30, if the body shop had some heavy cars go and stuff like that, but we were just running ragged. When we got to the point where I was going to take over, I got rid of the tow trucks, and that was part of the way that we paid off some of those balance sheet debts. But we realized that between paying for insurance and liability and the amount of money we could pay for another company to sublet our tows was much more cost effective, because the maintenance and stuff you get on these trucks is just crazy.
Yeah.
And we were taking up space that we could use for repairs and stuff to actually create revenue for the business. So we first got rid of the tow trucks. We paid some of our debts down and whatnot. And then eventually I decided I wanted to go multi-shop, and I knew I couldn't do that if I was still in the body shop industry. And so we were running a body shop and a car shop out of the same location.
Which was bigger?
The car shop was bigger in revenue. I got to the car shop till it was doing about 1.4, and the body shop was doing about 800,000.
Okay.
So we shut down the body shop, and we added 4 bays in our truck shop, and we added 6 bays in our body shop. So we went from effectively 4 car bays to 16 car bays with double stacks and a couple of alignment racks and stuff like that. But so we basically just, I had to break it down into one thing. There's no way I could do all that stuff. And so it was tough too, because that was a tough time, because we were at the point where we started making money, and then we shut the body shop down, and that was a revenue stream that took another 3 to 6 months to build back up. So there's a period of time there where it was a good move, but you had to believe that it was a good move for a little bit of time.
Some guts, man.
Yeah. So, we took the store from doing under $70,000 a month to we now have a business that does about $700,000 a month. That shop alone does close. It's touching 400. So we're about 360, 380 a month, usually on a regular basis. And, we had to figure it all out though. We had to figure all the pay plans out. So how did I buy the business? I basically set up a payment plan with my dad where I pay him $2,000 a month until he passes away.
And did you do this before you shut down the body shop, turned it all around, or
yes,
after?
Okay. We did.
So you had no sign that this was going to be a great decision or work out for you?
No. I mean, I had some counsel, and my dad wanted, we bought something that was worth nothing. And my parents had taken the last bit of their retirement and put it back into the business to pay bills and do some stuff when we were struggling and whatnot. And so, you know, they were the age where they could go on Social Security and Medicare and stuff. And like, I think my dad makes more money now with me paying him for some stuff than he did when he was ever making running the business. Yeah. I mean, it was a good deal for both of us. And he really wanted to give me the business, but that was a little bit messy with siblings and stuff like that. So yeah. I felt like, and I felt it was my responsibility to pay for the business. I don't like to be given anything, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm still not good at receiving. While I knew that there was a possibility there on paper, yes, it really wasn't worth a whole lot. And so we figured this out, and I don't think we ever imagined we'd get to this point. I mean, from a location standpoint, this business is like 5,000 car count a day in the little town of Burlington, Kentucky, doing good revenue numbers for a shop like that. And so we never thought it would be what it is. But at that point, no, we had no idea. So it was tight, believe it or not. $2,000 a month let's figure out how we're going to do this at that period of time. And then
now you don't notice.
No, no, you don't. We got all the other stupid things we pay for that we notice a little bit more. So yeah.
That's powerful, man. So as you got this thing bought, all of a sudden some chains fell off. It's all up to you to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that transition of it's all on your shoulders now.
For me, honestly, it was probably a little bit more of a breath of fresh air. Myself and my dad were never the eye-to-eye guy. I've always been a riskier person, I should say. Probably there was a period of my life where it was probably too risky. But I just always believed in the people that I had around me. Especially at this point, I mean, I'd made some really great relationships and people I could call. And I just remember when I had one shop, when I'd go pick up parts or something like that, every single time I had an opportunity to get out of the shop, I was calling somebody that owned a shop, my coach, something like that. Like, we were on the phone all the time. Man, I was just learning in the middle of going to pick up parts or pick up a customer or doing this kind of stuff. And so I felt pretty confident about that. Every time I wanted to do something, it was an argument with my dad. And he was very much stuck in, this is the way that we've always done it for years. Why would you want to change that? And I remember, I'll tell you the story about how I got my dad to retire and sell me the shop. We made the executive decision to get a new phone system without asking him. And up to that point, we had just like the four lines, like the landline phone system. So we went and got voice over IP systems, and he comes in one morning, and at this point he was doing some golfing, and he was maybe working 20, 25 hours a week. He comes in, he picks up the phone, he doesn't know how to dial out. And you sit there and you watch him, and he messes with it for a minute, and he picks the phone up and he slams it on the desk, and he goes, he had a couple of choice words, and he said, "I'm done with this crap. I'm going home." He never came back. He's like, "That's too much for me between all this crap you guys got on the computer and this new phone system and stuff." He's like, "Hell, I can't even work." And so, at that point, he became the shop mascot. So he'd show up and hang out and talk to some of the old timers and stuff. And just, it was great.
You worked him out.
We worked him out, yeah. So, but going back to your question there, Aaron, like, the biggest thing for me was just, it was the circle, man. That gave me the confidence that I needed to be able to do some of the stuff. And it was a little bit freeing when I didn't have that person over my shoulder telling me all the stuff that I'm learning from the people that I trust and follow wasn't going to work, or he didn't understand why it needed to happen. And that was, that's a really interesting dynamic for a lot of people, I think, because I think that there's people that have, whether it be mentors, parents, brothers, siblings, anybody in business, these are people you love, you trust, you care for, and they may not be giving you the best advice.
Dude, they may be telling you not to do it. There are owners that are here right now that have employees saying this will never work.
Well, my dad, every time we've opened a new store, my dad still says, is there ever going to come a time where this, like, what you have is good enough for you? He's like, why wouldn't you just stay with one store? Why do you want all that responsibility? And I just, respectfully, I have just said, Dad, I'm not you. Like, you don't understand. Like, you wanted the business. I want the people. I believe this is what I was meant to do. Like, I believe that, as I said, it's never been about money from that moment. It's always been about the people. And that's the fulfilling part for me.
Yeah.
I have everything that I want in life. I have a beautiful family. I got a house that I can sleep in and I can shower in. That's all I need. Everything I want, I already have. So at this point, it's like, maybe there's some purpose here. But I think that that's probably the biggest point. I think my dad's actually more proud of that now. As I get older consistently, I find out that our ideas of what, we just never lined up. Like, I think he always thought that I wanted money or to go buy this or that kind of stuff. And so I just think that we got a lot more in line as I got older, and our relationship got so, and that's the biggest benefit about taking over the business, is my relationship with my dad got good. And I don't know that I could look back on the—
Because you weren't working together.
Yeah.
With all that friction.
Right. My mom worked in the business too when she was alive. And so— Can you imagine the son who's smarter than everybody coming home to the dad who has all the experience and the mom's the bookkeeper? That was a great time.
That's a hard—
There's a lot of TV dinners you were warming up yourself. Like, dad's in one room, mom's in the other, and I'm just trying to avoid both of them.
Yeah.
So this, you said a powerful line there. You said that a lot of people are giving you advice and it may not be the best advice.
Mm-hmm.
Can you expand on that? Because my brain's just running. I'm running down that highway. Explain what you mean by that and touch on all the people that are right now discovering this whole new world of business and they're trying to get to that next level, but at the same time, they're having to fight all this bad advice.
We're all going through stuff at any point in our life, whether it be marriage issues with kids, business, church issues, just friend issues, right? And you try to explain it to folks and nobody really has a better understanding of it than you do. And so— Here's the thing that probably was the biggest thing for me. I was actively going outside of my bubble, my town, my family, and talking to people all over the world, all over the country. And when you start looking at the people you're getting advice from, frame of view, it starts to give you some awareness, like, well, they're just looking at it because they've only known this little town, this little street. This is it. This is all they got. And then all of a sudden you start going out in the world and you start seeing people from all over the place having the same experiences as you, and you're commiserating or you're just talking about these things and stuff. And it's the pool in which you're able to learn from. And so I started realizing that, in our little town was a handful of little shops, and we just controlled everything. And it's just a very, very small sample size compared to the population of what's out there. And so the biggest thing for me was my purview. And even the advice that I've got from my dad and my brother, there's been plenty of good advice, but there's also been advice that was just blinders, you know, it was just only from their experiences. And so it's tough because you start taking it. It's funny. I usually say this, like, don't take advice from people you wouldn't ask for it in the first place. Boy, there's a whole lot of people in this world that are willing to give you advice.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
There's not very many people in this world that you should ask for advice from. You get to a point in your life where you just, you're learning, you don't have confidence, lack of confidence. So you just don't, whatever you're doing is not working, you don't have confidence. And then everybody gives you advice from all over. And you want to take all that advice because maybe you like that person or you respect them or you think they know more than you. And then you come to find out, like, I heard something a while back that credibility is the foundation of leadership.
Okay.
I thought about it for like 2 weeks and I was sitting there going, I don't agree with this. I don't like that idea. And about the end of the second week came and I go, holy crap, it's really true. Credibility is the foundation of leadership. In order to be a great leader, you have to be a credible leader. And what does that mean? Like, you can't just be a guy that's poo-pooed everything away and say it doesn't work. You got to be open-minded, willing to change and willing to do that stuff. So I tried to find people with the most credibility to listen to. And I had to, unfortunately, cut off some of the people that I didn't see as credible any longer. So I started looking for more credible people rather than just the people who were willing to give me advice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a big change.
There were two things you said in there that I think were, you opened yourself up to always learn,
mm-hmm.
and you spent a lot of time learning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where a lot of times, and you went outside your circle.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people struggle, but having that mindset of, or having that open-mindedness just to learn and start taking in and absorbing as much as you possibly could to determine
yeah.
whether or not what you're hearing is accurate and balance each other off the information off of it is really a big deal.
Well, I just made a decision that I may not like what you tell me. I may not like the advice that you give me, but I'm going to go verify it myself that your advice is bad because it might be good. I might just be closed-minded. And so I really just got into the verification process. I mean, once I got into business and realized I was in well over my head, I went back and got my MBA. I followed that up with, when I started getting more involved with people and stuff, I went back and started pursuing my doctorate in organizational leadership and stuff. And so I always wanted to learn because I always wanted to find out, like, what are the better ways I can do this? What are the best ways I can do that? But I think some of my best lessons came from bad advice because it forced me to go verify that it was bad advice. Because just taking it or just, I didn't want to be, how hypocritical would it be of me to say that this guy was just being closed-minded and then me be closed-minded to someone's advice, right? I feel like you can't talk out of both sides of your mouth on that. And so I may not like the advice you give me, or I might really love the advice you're giving me, but I decided that I was going to go verify it on my own and do my own due diligence yeah. and learn and make sure that this was good advice, it was bad advice. There's been many times that I've flip-flopped on that, where I thought was good, sounded good, ended up being bad. And what I thought was bad actually ended up being very fruitful.
Yeah. Mm. It's interesting. I've learned from riding motorcycles this lesson is when there are a lot of people who give you advice about riding motorcycles.
Wait, you ride motorcycles?
I do ride motorcycles. So they'll be like, hey, you need to ride this tire. You need to run this air pressure. You need to do this and this with your yeah. suspension. And I always come back to, I need to know your lap times. That's the reality of it. A guy who's giving you advice about a certain thing,
yeah.
he might not be running at the pace you're at. He might not ride it like you ride it. He mm-hmm. might not be as heavy on the brakes in that corner as you are. And what you're about to do is going to put you into a ditch.
Right.
So it's good to evaluate the context of the information you're receiving. There's always somebody running faster.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to get information from those guys. And sometimes even that information might not necessarily fit with the way you're going to ride it or do it. But it's understanding that context and where it's coming from is really important.
Well, and to your point, I mean, that's actually a really massive point that has been a big part of growth too, which is there's been plenty of people who have said things to me that perhaps even from a credibility standpoint, you normally wouldn't listen to. And a little nugget just from somebody who might be swimming, just barely making it. They might have something brilliant. And that might be the one thing keeping them holding on in a lot of cases. And you can learn from those below you. And I think that's a big part of it too, is like, I started listening. I just started listening to everybody and then making decisions for myself. And I got to a point where I felt pretty confident in my ability to make decisions for myself. And that just came from knowledge, experience, confidence. I mean, all that stuff.
You know, that piece, and Jay just hit on it with the lap times. That's like you're doing 350 a month out of one location and somebody doing 30 grand a month gives you advice.
Mm-hmm.
The 30 grand a month person might have something they are really, really good at. But by and large, their limited experience, that tunnel vision that they're using, you get to watch in that moment how much they believe in what they are saying.
Mm-hmm.
And when you know it's bad advice, you're hearing it and you're going, man, this guy, this is crazy. But he believes it so much.
Right. Yeah.
He believes it so much, and he has to because it's attached to the ego, like you're mm-hmm. talking about before. And so he hangs on to it and believes it
right.
and preaches it because he can never not be right. If he's wrong,
yeah.
his whole worldview falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
So he tells you, he tells everybody else, and then we don't know because we don't ask their lap times. We don't ask their revenue.
Yeah.
And then bad advice gets just regurgitated over and over and over to people. And before you know it, we all do the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Because we don't ever ask, what's the proof behind this, right?
Yeah.
And so you're absolutely right. I feel like there's this spectrum, and this is where it's right, this is where it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the odds, the percentage of it being right or wrong, are dependent upon their personal success. Is there always, even when they're way over here, some good stuff? Yeah. But it's probably 10% of what's coming out of their mouth.
Right.
90% is wrong. And somehow you sorted that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the conclusion I'm coming to. Like, you started sorting it early. You started questioning the source.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think made you question the source? What do you think made you go, I'm not going to listen to you anymore, Bill?
Well,
what made you do that?
If I could, it goes back to the credibility, right?
Yeah.
And I think that perhaps my college education, especially in research, set me up very well for the hypothesis and then the testing phase and the result. And I can tell you, we wasted a lot of money on theory. It didn't come to fruition. I mean, we built machines. We had backing from a lot of different manufacturers that we were trying to solve a problem, and you couldn't get it. You couldn't figure it out. And so the science, the engineering, teaches you a little bit to build in some skepticism. And it basically, you have to have proof. I mean, when you have a theory, you have to prove it. And so I think that I got in that cycle of proving theory. And if you were right, you could try to prove it to me. But like, I needed more than just like this answer or that answer. I needed to see the whole picture. I needed to know from the cradle to the end effect, like how did this process go? What happened? And you know, my dad was a pretty skeptical guy. He'd always say, believe half of what you, nothing of what you've heard. When he's make your own decisions, that kind of stuff. And so we were just a family that we always had that idea of figure it out on your own. And there's so many people in this world that'll try to swindle you and lie to you. I mean, and it was just figure it out for yourself. You know how I could tell that guy was lying to you, or don't listen to that guy, he's full of crap, that kind of stuff. I mean, it probably had more to do with like my family dynamic and just the way I was taught growing up than anything. I mean,
you were taught to be more skeptical.
Yeah. I mean, you want to trust people, but that can get you in trouble sometimes. We always wanted to go below the layer because the people, listen, I was that guy, so I know. I would tell you how great I was.
Hmm.
And if you just peeled back one layer of the onion, you might be able to see it wasn't that great.
Yeah.
So to be perfectly honest with you, probably the best answer I can give to that was my own personal awareness of I was that person. I know that person's behaviors. I know how that person would have acted in this moment. I know what they would have said. I know how they would have tried to sell it. And because I was that guy, I can snuff that guy out a lot of times now. And I think that that's it. I think that once you get to that point, you realize that you get through some personal awareness. Honestly, the Enneagram stuff, like figuring out my personality, what the unhealthy version of your personality is versus the healthy version of your personality is. And you read that and all of a
what
sudden,
what is yours?
I'm a three. Threes unite.
I think we're all threes in this room. Yeah.
So threes are for sure always the best.
They are.
You might ask our wives.
Yeah, my wife, the helper, would disagree. But when you read the most unhealthy personality on the Enneagram for the three, and it exposes you,
yeah,
that'll change you in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
and then you read the funny thing is you read the healthiest. And the healthiest, you're at a nine. You're the worst. You're the worst of your personality, right? And then you read into the one, And that's the person you're trying to portray that you are. So the person you want to be is here. The person you actually are is here. And if you can accept that, it doesn't take you long to climb the ladder.
So if I'm somebody who doesn't know anything about that, what does that mean?
So the Enneagram is
good point.
Yeah. So the Enneagram
somebody's probably listening and go, I don't know what you guys are talking about. One, a three, a seven.
Yeah. It's a personality test. There's basically 9 personalities. Each one of them has its individual traits.
Yeah.
And within each one of these 9 personalities, there are 9 levels of each personality, 1 being the healthiest, number 9 being the least healthy.
Yeah.
And if you're willing to dive into it and put some emphasis into it, I think the book is The Road Back to You by Ian Crone.
Yep. That's a good book.
But
there's also one of Becoming Us.
Becoming Us. Yep.
Yes.
Man, well, if you need some self-development, that'd probably be the first place I'd recommend that anybody starts is the Enneagram, because it identifies where you're at right now and where you can be. And it basically builds a roadmap.
It starts simple.
Mm-hmm.
It gets complicated as you go into it, but it starts simple. So it's very quick to easily grasp it and understand your kids, your spouse, your employees.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, that probably brought the largest amount of self-awareness to my life, and it changed a lot of things. So
I'm going to pivot a little bit as we're wrapping up. We've heard your lap times. We know where you're at. You've talked about how you evaluate information.
Mm-hmm.
So for somebody listening, where you're at today, what's something really important that you want to convey that you've learned that's important to you? Like, what would you tell somebody? What's your advice?
Yeah, I think that I've always said rules without relationships equals rebellion. And so, and I think—
Man, this guy's deep.
Wait, rules without relationships.
Rules without relationships equals rebellion. Wow. And I even use that in the business. I always say transactions without trust creates turmoil. So
he's got these, like, triplicate things going on.
Yeah, he's like TTT.
So the relationship is what got me to where I am. Like, my relationship with my dad, even though we would have knockdown dragouts. I mean, my dad is a son of a German immigrant brought here during the war, hard-nosed farmer, never wrong, stubborn as can be. And my ego and his stubbornness, just, we went bound for bound for bound. But I'll tell you, there was one day when I was walking upstairs, I was mad at my dad, and he was sitting in his chair. I think he was listening to the radio, and he said, me and your grandpa got in a lot of fights, but we never went to bed without saying I love you. And that, good Lord, as a teenage kid, stuck with me. And
it's good, man.
And what you realize is like, we can fight like hell, but at the end of the day, you're on the same team. And that relationship, if I hadn't have been able to have that relationship, if I got mad at my dad, if I'd have gone on and become an engineer for whoever knows what or done whatever knows what, I wouldn't have gotten to the purpose. And I always think about Proverbs, I believe it's Proverbs 19, verse 20, as many of the plans in a man's heart, but is the Lord's purpose that prevails. Boy, I had a lot of things planned for my life, but it seemed like there's a lot of different purposes that have played out. And I've been willing to adapt to those purposes. But when you talk about what's the advice you want for people, and you can't fake leadership, you can't fake caring, but the relationships that you build are going to be the things that get you to where you're going. You can't do it alone. Nobody ever has done it alone.
Mm-hmm.
There's always been a team of people around them. And even my guys at the stores and stuff, they'll say, you know, we're here because of you, man. Like, they're like, we need you to keep going. And I've said that for years about other people, whether it be Aaron or Adam or a lot of these other guys that I've come to build relationships with. Like, you guys have to keep going because I need to follow you, because, like, I'm addicted to it. Like, I love it. And my guys are in the same boat. They're like, you got to keep going. You got to go to ShopFix. You got to go learn. You got to go speak. You got to do whatever you're doing, because we want all that stuff that you're bringing back here. And those relationships are what is keeping my company going. Those are the relationships that are helping us continue to grow. It's a relationship with the GS. It's a relationship with your bookkeeper. It's a relationship with your family. Like, all that stuff matters. You get work done when you have a relationship, because when you can go up to somebody and you can have a hard discussion and you can go to war together and you can go at each other, you can go to war with each other, and you can come back at the end of the day and you can say, I love you. You can get a lot done. Because if we spend all this time being our feelings hurt, we always say, well, we always tell my guys, if I find your feelings, I'm not giving them back.
Dude, he's got so many of these lines.
Well, that's an Adam Prizer quote. No, I've stolen that from him, but
it's yours now.
It's mine now, but we do that. It's like, if we find your feelings, we're not giving them back. And like, you can go to war and you can come back at the end of the day and you're going to bed and you're saying like, hey, I love you, man. Like, appreciate you. Like, I know today was a hard day, but we're going to fight again tomorrow. You can move. You can literally move mountains. I mean, that's how so much has gotten done in this world. And all these companies that have been on the brink of disaster, big, big companies, the IBMs, the Apples, the Amazons, they got through it because they had a few guys that were willing to fight to the end. And it was those relationships that got those companies to become the Goliaths that they are now. And I think that rings true in most successful organizations. There's not a lot of successful organizations that haven't gone through a bad time. And mm-hmm. the things that got them through those good times were relationships. Relationship with your banker. Relationship with the person. You know, I mean, there's just so many.
Vendors, et cetera. Yeah.
It's crazy. And so just taking care of people, loving people. That's the biggest thing. And you don't have to go overboard with it. I'm not saying give everything away, but give all that you can give of yourself and be the example for these people and grow people. That's a huge part of it, man.
Good stuff, man.
That's great. I'm going to have to write all those.
Hold on. Rules without relationship, rebellion.
Yep.
If I find your feelings. Yeah. I'm going to keep them.
Yeah. What was the
deal?
Turmoil.
Transactions without trust equals turmoil.
Transactions without trust equals turmoil. Dang, these are good.
You don't build trust with a customer.
Are these just amazing?
they're really good. You know how you hold on to those like foundational things you hear somebody say?
He just blew your mind.
There's been so many people that I've just, so many one-liners in my life that have just hit me right in the core. And you just sit there and you just stew on it and you're just like, man, like
I bet some guy in his pickup truck right now just pulled over. He's got a notepad out and he's writing this down and he's looking up going, how do they know?
He's bawling right now. He poured his heart. He poured his feelings.
He did.
It's true.
Ryan's not gonna give him back either.
No, not at all.
Ryan, thanks so much. This was fantastic.
Good stuff, dude.
Yeah, thank you.
Good stuff.
Appreciate you.